And right now, another wow-inducing subject, the wow, that's a crazy-looking bird type of wow, as sprawl continues to roll away from America's cities, past the suburbs into the exurbs, the further most people have to travel to experience wilderness. Fortunately, though, as development pushes into nature, nature is pushing its way back into development. If you look closely, wild America is likely raging just past your patio. As we explore the backyard biomass, we want to hear from you, whether you live in a high-rise or a split-level rambler. How's the nature watching from your back deck? What's the strangest animal you've spotted out there? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You can send a brief email to us, TOTN at NPR.org. And joining us now from the studios of Maine Public Broadcasting Network in Portland, Maine, is Hannah Holmes, author of the new book, Suburban Safari, A Year on the Lawn. And it's nice to have you on Talk of the Nation, Hannah.
Great to be here, Neil.
I guess we couldn't even call spring up there in Maine yet. What's going on in your backyard?
Well, in spite of 18 inches of icy snow, it's sort of a polar-looking place, I was out yesterday and there were insects all over one of the apple trees. These are supposedly cold-blooded animals, and they're dealing with a foot and a half of snow, and they're making out just fine, thank you, which is actually kind of par for the course.
Now, you have been on nature expeditions to the Red Cliffs in Mongolia and to study lemurs in Madagascar. How did you get the idea of spending a year on your lawn?
I always felt guilty about how much I knew about these fantastic ecosystems around the world and how zilch I knew about my own. As a good naturalist, I was completely ignorant. Having grown up here, I just knew nothing. And then after September 11th, I think like so many people, I wanted a project that was closer to home. And it seemed like the perfect time to just unfold the lawn chair and sit out there for a year and see what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Unlike most of us who do that, you took notes, though.
I did. I took notes and I had some structure. And whenever I saw bizarre behavior, I ran into the internet and found peer-reviewed journal articles that explained what the heck was going on. This is how I learned that my chipmunk, who was taking about 2 cups of sunflower seeds out of my hand every day, could actually get his entire winter budget of food in the course of 4 hours.
Really?
He was coming to my house for 2 hours a day for about 4 months.
You also learned that what you normally would have conceived of as a singing by birds is a death threat sometimes.
Oh, they're just furious little animals. As testosterone goes up in the spring, the singing just happens with the male bird. It's just like testosterone bubbles right out of their little mouths. Hmm. And what they're saying is not, come here, my darling, but get out of here, all you other guys. And they say it as loud as they can to prove that they're very, very strong.
Let's get some listeners on the line. We're talking about suburban safaris and what lives on your lawn, 800-989-8255. And Deb is calling from Ithaca, New York.
Is that me?
Yes, you.
Hi. Yes, I had a weird experience. I was out in my front yard a couple and I found this really strange-looking creature. Never saw anything like it in my life. It turned out to be a horny toad.
In Ithaca, New York?
In Ithaca, New York. And I thought and thought, and as I told your screener, it finally dawned on me that it must have come with my niece from Texas a couple of days before that.
A hitchhiker.
So I called her at her motel and said, you know what? If you can't take him back with you, he's not going to survive.
No, he's not. Certainly not a winner in Ithaca.
But it was the bizarrest incident, and I really did feel like I was in a different place.
Well, that's interesting, Deb. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And Hannah Holmes, there are a lot of visitors from strange planets who come to your lawn as well.
Well, this is one of the interesting things I learned about the suburbs is this is sort of the landing place for a lot of exotic things that really don't belong here. All these stories we hear about exotic invasive species, they usually start in cities and towns where ships pull up and unload their stuff. Oftentimes, the stuff has some unintended hitchhikers who make themselves very much at home in the cities and suburbs and then spread out into the wilderness areas, which is when they really start to cause problems.
Uh-huh. Because then they start displacing native species.
Or eating everything up or changing the way the soil works, which is what earthworms are doing up here in the north. Most people don't realize earthworms are not native to the northern parts of our country. But they came in flower pots from England and so on. They do a wonderful job in the suburbs and in the gardens, but when you put them out in the woods where they're starting to get now, they move rather slowly, they dramatically change the way the soil functions.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Bill. Bill's with us from Phoenix, Arizona. Bill, you there? Yeah, go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I live in Phoenix, Arizona. Just a couple of years ago, bought a home in a downtown historic district. So I'm pretty much surrounded by sky-rise apartments and office buildings and so forth. And was surprised to see one day when my boyfriend called me out in the backyard because he saw a strange bird in the sky, and we looked up, and it turned out, actually, it was a pair of golden eagles right in the downtown area.
Phoenix, Arizona. Good Lord.
Right. And they're fairly common when you get out in the desert around here, but you just never see them in urban areas. But actually being, nesting around cliffs and being soaring birds and all that, they probably like the sky rises because of the updrafts and that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, we all remember the story of a pale male, the red-tailed hawk in New York City. So maybe golden eagles aren't so different.
Exactly.
It's a lovely trend. A lot of animals are starting to figure out that the suburbs and the cities actually have a lot to offer. So there's an awful lot of variety of food that people grow thinking it's ornamental. Well, it's also edible. There are a variety of habitats and a variety of delicious little items like mice and lizards and so on, feeding on all that other stuff. Animals are starting to filter back in who were scared off by human habitation centuries ago. So we're seeing all kinds of crazy things move back in among people, from coyotes to even cougars in the West.
Yep. I've seen other examples of that here, too, where in suburban areas where, as you say, a lot of the wildlife has been driven off by urban sprawl, actually coming back into the neighborhoods that are 20, 25 years old. When I lived in Mesa, I found a horned owl living in a palm tree in my backyard.
It's a really wonderful thing. It's really going to test our commitment to wildlife when we start having the larger, scarier predators around. But I think it's really neat.
Bill, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
And keep an eye out.
I will.
All right. Hannah, this return of these creatures, they're dining on lawns, and lawns, I was raised to believe, were sort of a vegetative desert. You describe them as what? Grass farms.
The grass farm notion is such a kooky thing. The lawn as it came to America was the English lawn, which was frankly a sheep pasture. We didn't have lawn mowers at the time, and the lawn was, it really was a sheep pasture. We imported the sort of aesthetic of having this flat greenish thing, or rolling, or whatever you like, but sort of short and green. And then about 100 years ago, the U.S. government and the golf industry and the garden clubs all sort of put their little heads together and decided every homeowner ought to be farming grass. They didn't actually realize the difficulty of growing European grasses that are accustomed to damp, soggy conditions in places like Phoenix, where we persist in trying to do this.
Here's an email from Jason. I live in the metro area of Salt Lake City. In an apartment complex in our parking lot about 2 weeks ago, we witnessed a moose drinking out of the creek that runs behind the complex. I've seen it 3 times since then. Moose are hardly unusual in Portland, Maine.
I wish they were more plentiful because it's so cool to see such a big animal in a place where you don't expect it. But another dynamic that's responsible for some of these animals coming into the suburbs is that we now understand it's a bit hazardous to discharge firearms in residential areas. And the animals have started to understand that we're not going to shoot them. The crows figured this out a few decades ago, and now we have crows like crazy all over. And the other animals are starting to figure it out, too. White-tailed deer. I mean, there's like speed bumps around here. There's so many of them. And that's because you can't shoot them.
Let's talk down with Robert. Robert's with us from Bulverde, Texas.
That's right. Neil, we've got almost the same situation here with white-tailed deer. We're only about 20 minutes north of the San Antonio airport. And the lots in the subdivision are like 2 acres, so their houses are split far apart. But we had our first sighting of a mountain lion just 2 doors away, and it seems like a natural consequence of having just deer all over the place. I mean, they'll come eat the chrysanthemum right by the front door, and a lot of people are feeding them, and so it just seems like a dinner invitation to mountain lions to take advantage of that situation.
Well, Hannah was talking just a minute ago about some of the difficult decisions we're going to have to face when big predators come into the interface more directly with people. What are you thinking about this mountain lion?
You know, my kids are nervous about bringing their grandkids here when we told them about the mountain lion sighting because, you know, they've been known to attack people, and certainly a child would be even more inviting. So I myself kind of look over my shoulder when I'm walking around outside.
And if you saw one, what would you do? Would you call the animal control people?
I don't think so. I think I'd just grab my 12-gauge and... because I think they're just too much of a threat to human beings.
Well, that's obviously discharging firearms is a big change. That's against the law in a lot of places. So.
Yeah, it is. But I think a case could be made for self-defense as well.
All right. Well, interesting. Robert, thanks very much for the phone call.
You bet.
We're talking today with Hannah Holmes, whose new book is Suburban Safari, A Year on the Lawn. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. And this is Kim. Kim's with us from Fort Myers in Florida.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm stuck in my car in a pouring rainstorm, and I actually literally live in suburban safari all the time. I drive about 600 miles a week for my job, and we go over a lot of canals. Our roadways are built over water. I have seen alligators in roadways. I've seen them 12-foot-long alligators on golf courses. Those are our speed bumps down here. talk about scary predators.
Yeah. Hannah, I don't think you have any alligators in Maine.
Not yet. I mean, climate change is going to open up all kinds of wonderful possibilities. But yeah, Florida's been dealing with dangerous predators for a very long time and perhaps can give the rest of us some guidance as these more frightening predators move in among us.
Well, one thing that's changing, they used to have less strict laws about the removal of alligators on certain out islands on the southwest coast of Florida, but after there were actually some deaths last year from alligator attacks, they are now calling in the wildlife specialists to remove alligators over a certain size or any that appear to be threatening to the public that are, you know, hanging out in backyards. It can be just dangerous to mow your grass or fish off your, you know, boat dock or down by your canal, especially if you have your grandkids. So people are very aware of that. But the upside to living in Florida as well, though, would be that we see so many seabirds, and we do have eagles here. We have many bald eagles, and they're right here in the city areas as well as the immediate suburbs.
And you don't have that 19 inches of snow that Hannah was talking about.
Well, but we had 4 hurricanes in a row, so I guess it's kind of a trade-off.
All right. Kim, thanks very much for the phone call.
We love your station, and this is an interesting topic because it is a safari down here in Florida. Thanks.
Thanks very much. Here's an email from Alan Gerdes. The strangest creature I've seen in my yard was a hissing beetle or some type of bug that was on my screen door. I saw the large bug on my screen and went to knock it off when it started to hiss at me. It startled me quite a bit, but nobody believes me, not even my wife.
Oh, the loudest hissing beetle I know of is the Madagascar hissing cockroach, which some people do keep as pets or as food for other animals. And they're about 2 inches long and mahogany colored. They're beautiful. They look a bit like pill bugs or sow bugs. People call them roly-polies. But they're huge and brown, and they flatten out and make a very loud, startling hissing noise when you squish them or tap them on the back or scare them. But there are other little creatures that can make a little hiss, too.
I know you say they're beautiful and you've looked at them through microscopes. I did want to inform the audience, though, that every time you pick up something with an ant on it, you squeal and throw it across the room.
Usually, especially if there's an impressionable young girl that I'm trying to show off to.
That's Ms. Science there.
I'm afraid so.
The bugs, though, in your yard that you write about, you wrote about a spider with great passion.
Oh, this girl, she knew I was terrified of spiders, and so she made her web right across my office window. So anytime I looked out, I was staring into the undercarriage of this big ball of a spider. I'm sure by Florida standards, it was a little pea of a spider, but it took me some time to get used to just sitting next to her with a pane of glass in between. Once I got used to it, it was astonishing just to watch her do her thing. I didn't realize they eat their web every day or two. and make a fresh one. And it was absolutely fascinating to see her make it. I never got to see her take it down. She was very secretive. But one day I did get to see her making the new one. It was just marvelous.
Yeah. Let's get another caller in. This is Dennis. Dennis calling from Somerset, New Jersey.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Yes, I live in a fairly rural part of New Jersey, and we feed the birds in winter, so we regularly have the blue jays and the cardinals. But fairly regularly now, we've been having a flock of wild turkeys. They enjoy the bird seed that gets dropped on the ground. There were 21 in the yard not too long ago, gobbling up the seeds and the grass and whatever they wanted. In fact,
they have just exploded, haven't they? In the last few years, it's the same in Maine. They're perching on people's cars out by the mall.
Oh, yes.
We
see them in the road occasionally, too, crossing the roads.
Hmm. Oh, they're just everywhere. And they are going to be a very interesting suburban pest because they're huge and they eat a lot.
In fact, as I stand here, I see several of them gathering in the yard right now.
It's snowing in New Jersey, isn't it?
Pardon me?
Is it snowing?
Oh, not in New Jersey, no. It's raining today, at least the part we're in, but... it's fairly mild, in the 40s or 50s. So.
Oh, I see. So it's not exactly prohibitive for wild turkeys.
No, certainly not.
All right. Well, Dennis, keep an eye out, and maybe we'll visit on Thanksgiving.
Very good.
Okay.
Take care.
Hannah Holmes, thank you so much for being with us today.
It was entirely my pleasure.
Hannah Holmes is the author, most recently, of Suburban Safari, A Year on the Lawn, and she joined us from the studios of Maine Public Broadcasting in Portland, Maine. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.